Thanks, Ray. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? Don't make unnecessary journeys. It's mad the way a phrase like that, you know, sticks in your head. How long ago is it since Theresa Mannion stood on a windswept Salt Hill promenade and told us not to make unnecessary journeys? Anyway, it's cold out there and it's wet and there's snow coming. I know there's been snow elsewhere, but there's snow coming to the East Coast as well and all over the place. It's a soup and gilet day. Yeah, I had soup today. I haven't had soup in a long time. And I wore the gilet. That's what they call them. Their vests, whatever you want to call them. I don't know what you call them. I wore it indoors, which you wouldn't normally do. But that's the type of day it is. You need to be warm and cosy and soup. It was parsnip, just so you know. Parsnip soup was on the menu in the RT canteen. I don't like gloopy soup. I don't know how you are on soup. Gloopy soup reminds me of baby food, and I'm not a baby. You might have noticed that. So what I do, and here's a tip for you, if you don't like the gloopy soup, fill the thing, whatever container it is, two-thirds the way up, and then go over to the boiling water, hot water dispenser, and then top the soup up. And it gives it a nice sort of consistency. Not quite consommé, but like just nice, and you can actually drink it as opposed to eat it. Down with that sort of thing, as in gloopy soup. How are you on wearing gilets indoors? Is that okay with you? Fine, thank you. Today, Dr. Coma Nochter is coming in. We're going to discuss, actually, the new primary school curriculum with him. I think it's brilliant news that we're introducing a modern European language into the primary school curriculum in this country. How long have we been talking about that? It's, you know, 40, 50 years. And why did it take so long? Anyway, it's going to happen, which is great news, because we are a modern European country. We should be learning from an early age, because they say, and I'll put this to Coma Nochter, they say that your brain, whatever way it's structured, you know, it's easier to learn a second or third language when you're around 10, around that age. I think it's third class they're introducing it, so that's around 10 or 11. But we'll discuss that with the expert, Dr. Coleman Nochter, when he comes in. And if you have any questions for Coleman, he's a child and adolescent psychotherapist. If you're having any issues parenting or, you know, troublesome teenagers or whatever, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie, and you'll get some free expert advice from Coleman Nochter. Yeah, so the build-up, it's happening on Sunday. The Oscars, 14 Irish nominations, and I see there's a guy called Doug Murray who's sort of half Irish, so it's 14 and a half. He's been nominated for Sound for a BAPA movie. That's in the papers today. But James Martin, you haven't seen this probably yet, An Irish Goodbye. I watched it when it won the BAFTA. It's up for the best live action short category. And it's really beautiful and powerful. And James Martin is the star of it. The good news is that if you haven't seen it, it's up on the BBC iPlayer, and you're saying, I can't get that, Ray, because we're in Ireland. You're right, you can't, unless you do sort of jiggery-pokery, which are VP, whatever. But it's going to be on BBC One Northern Ireland on Sunday before the Oscars at 10:30. So even if you're not staying up, you might set your thingamajig to record it, because it's well worth a watch, An Irish Goodbye. Anyway, James, like a lot of the nominees, is over in LA, and he was out last night in O'Brien's pub, and he was playing the harmonica, and he's pretty good at it. So they had an old sing-song going, and Dirty Old Town has been played, and then James took the harmonica out of his back pocket and performed. And he gave a welly, gave it socks. James Martin there. And of course, we spoke to Tom Berkeley and Ross White, the writers and directors of An Irish Goodbye, when they won the BAFTA. And we wish them good luck with that. Paul Mescal's over there as well, and his family are over there. He was at the Vanity Fair party in Hollywood. He brought his brother and his sister, Donica and Nell. And of course, everybody wants to talk to him. Everyone wants a bit of Paul Mescal, but they didn't quite get his name right, which often happens. I would have thought it was pretty straightforward, but no. Did you hear that? No, neither did I. They say Mescal. Mr. Mescal. So polite, aren't they? Mister. It's always Mister. They'd never say Paul. Hey, Paul. That's the way we'd say it here. Hey, Paul. Over there you go. Mr. Mescal. Mr. Mescal. We're used to our Irish stars being claimed by Britain, and indeed Paul Mescal was claimed recently. A poll to find the UK's greatest British television presenter of all time has put David Attenborough at the top. Yay! Well done. But there are two Irish legends in there as well. At number five is Jon Snow. At number four, Graham Norton. Not British, but Irish. At number three, Bruce Forsyth. Very much British. At number two, Terry Wogan. And at number one, David Attenborough. So that's going to raise a few eyebrows, trying to take our Limerick and Cork men. I suppose there was a time when they could have pinched Gabo as well, because he worked over there, didn't he, before he came back. The UK have just revealed their entry for the Eurovision Song Contest. May Muller will be performing on home soil, because, as you know, the Eurovision is in Liverpool this year. 25-year-old will perform her track, I Wrote a Song. Instead I wrote a song. I don't know. They get straight into the final, you know that. They're straight into the final. I think because we won it seven times, we should get straight into the final as well. You don't think so? Just sort of an honorary final position. I've not been pedantic. Well, I am being pedantic. That should be I co-wrote a song, as opposed to I wrote a song, because she co-wrote it with Lewis Thompson and Karen Poole, and they've written for the likes of Kylie Minogue, Lily Allen, David Guetta. So that's a strong writing team there, but it doesn't sound different enough to win the Eurovision for me. But good luck to May. Good luck to May. I love these stories. Poor Bellamy Roth, age 40. He was on a business trip to Dublin. Right, he's 40. And he lost Puffy the Bear. Boo-hoo-hoo. Now, I shouldn't really mock. Because Bellamy is very attached to Puffy the Bear for the last 30 years. His wife, Zoe Powell, told Dublin Live, it's a very old bear, basically. My husband has had it for 30 years. And unfortunately, while on a business trip, he did that thing, you know, with lack of sleep and being tired, where he left it in the hotel. He got it when he was a child 30 years ago as a present from a family member he was visiting. Puffy means a hell of a lot. He has travelled everywhere with him. It probably sounds a bit strange for an adult man. He does sleep with the bear every night, says Zoe. He's a bit like Aloysius from Brideshead Revisited. You know, Lord Sebastian Flight's teddy bear in Brideshead Revisited was called Aloysius. Just, I didn't know that either. I had to look it up. And despite being 30 years old, Puffy has only had to be repaired once when it was falling apart. So he said it would mean a hell of a lot if the bear was returned to them. We both can't stop thinking about it. The hotel were lovely, but were unable to help us because they sent the linen off-site to be laundered. We're just wondering, on the assumption that it got caught up in the bed sheets, but we can't seem to get to the bottom of who the company they use is. We are hoping that is where the bear will be. Puffy the bear. You see, the reason I shouldn't mock is because I know somebody, a friend of mine, who has the bear from when they were a child, and this bear has travelled all over the world with them, and they've been to mad places, and they've been asked questions about the bear going through customs in all sorts of places, but this person's a strong, independent individual, and yet this little bear is comfort to them. And you can imagine, you know, if you're putting your head down on strange pillows all over the world, that to have something that, you know, connects you very strongly to home, the feel, the smell, that's the bond. That's the bond with Puffy the Bear. So although I've no experience of myself, Bellamy Roth, I can sort of empathise with you. And I'm sure there are people out there who have comfort blankets of sorts. And they're not always blankets. In this case, it's a bear. And now, because we have them at home, you can get a blankie bear. So it's a sort of a small square of fleece, and then there's a little head in the middle. You know, so if you lift up the head, it forms a sort of a tent. So that combines the two. Anyway, I'm sure there are people out there who have them for longer than 30 years. We hope that Bellamy is reunited with Puffy the Bear. And if there's anything we can do, if there's anybody has any information as to the whereabouts of Puppy the Bear, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. An Irish Goodbye is on RT1 this Saturday night, 10:40, says Mary. Thanks for that, Mary. And again, highly recommend it from here. And if you're going to be in bed, just press the record button. Talking about languages, my 2-year-old has a Norwegian mum and an Irish dad. Me, more's the pity for her. Anyway, she switches effortlessly between both and knows who to use which language with. Very clever. In addition to that, she never stops talking, so it doesn't seem to have affected her long-term linguistic development. Cheers from Norway, Fra Norge. David, can we have the Norwegian vote, please? Thanks for that. Yeah, it's just the brain is better at soaking up things when it's younger. 51551 ray@rte.ie. We'll tell you about the quiz in a moment, but first a little bit of this to brighten you up. It's the soup, the gilet, and this. It's like a big hug. Bobby McFerrin, Don't Worry, Be Happy. Did you know?
I'm not worried.
Oh, good man. That was the first a cappella song to reach number one in the United States of America back in 1988. And while we're on dates, 7 years ago it was that Theresa Mannion stood on the promenade of Salt Hill and said,
"Don't make unnecessary journeys."
Thank you. And then, of course, the lads with the samplers and the dance beats, they got a hold of it and she became viral. That's what happens when you do something like that. A fella in Cloheen used to say if someone called him Mister, his response was, "Don't Mister me. I was once as poor as yourself." Says PJ. Thanks, PJ. Ray, 'tis 11 degrees in Cork and 12 degrees in Carrickaline right now. Tropical air, says Anne-Marie. Yeah, the south coast seemingly is supposed to be noticeably milder than the rest of the country. That's what the man or the woman said on the forecast this morning. But we're getting it. Everyone's getting a bit of it, I think, eventually. Maybe not. Maybe not. But be careful out there and don't make any unnecessary journeys. Yeah. Okay. Right, we're looking for two people to come on to our Who Done It quiz after 4 o'clock and answer three Who Done It questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, films, comedians. And like all Who Done It's, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. And if you answer with a clue, it's easier. So you get one for a correct answer. And there is a prize, and it's a 2-night stay for two people in the Riverlea Hotel in Cork. It's part of the family run Irish luxury hotel group, the Doyle Collection. They're telling us the spring is in the air, and it's time to discover all Cork has to offer with the Riverlea Dinner Inclusive Stays for a limited time only. Use the promo code CHAMPAGNE when booking directly on their website to enjoy a complimentary bottle of champagne to toast your arrival. A beautiful riverside location, luxurious bedrooms and dining and drinks options to suit every taste. DoyleCollection.com/Cork. There you go. Today, Thursday, yes it is. Here's a qualifying question. What big event is taking place in LA this weekend? Is it the Oscars or the MTV Movie Awards? What big event is taking place in LA this weekend? Is it the Oscars or the MTV Movie Awards? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we've Amy, Sean and Alison in studio. They're going to jump out of a plane in memory of Amy and Alison's grandfather Larry. That's the thing, isn't it?
That's why you're here.
Yeah, that's why we're here. Yeah. Yeah, very excited.
Which is more nerve-wracking, the prospect of jumping out of a plane or being on national radio?
Oh, what do you think? That's a good question.
Probably this.
Probably both.
I have a serious fear of heights. So.
Have you? Plane. Have you, Sean? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm petrified.
And you're not even a blood relation of Larry.
No, I've been roped in.
You're married in, yeah.
I'm married in, yeah, exactly.
There's
exactly.
No escape. There's once no you're married into our family, that's now, it. That's it.
Yeah.
So Larry, granddad Larry, 2 years dead,
about two years
dead. Sounds like an amazing man.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Tell us about Larry. What age was he when he died?
So he was 88, almost 89.
Right.
He was 2 weeks off his 89th birthday. He was just the most amazing, positive character, I think. And we were so lucky to have him in our lives for all of the years. He was just... like, I suppose he just exuded positivity.
Right.
He was like sunshine. You know, you'd have a bad day, you'd go to him, he'd cheer you up instantly. And like, he suffered a lot with medical conditions throughout his whole life, but he always managed to stay so positive. And everyone he met just absolutely loved him. Like, he was up to mischief. He was like funny. He was just, he was the best.
Oh, is that his song? That's
yeah,
the way
actually,
yes.
When we were outside, we were listening.
Spooky,
like,
huh?
That's weird. Yeah, don't worry, be happy. He loved that song. And yeah. That was like his life mantra. He was like, don't worry, be happy. Everything will work out.
Yeah. How many children had he got, Amy?
He had four. Four girls.
Four girls, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. I said, that's mad, because I said Amy and I looked at Alison. That must have been really confusing for you.
Yeah, so he's four girls. He's my mum, Marguerite. He's Amy's mum, Veronica, our aunt Colette, and Sharon. So Sharon has special needs. So, I mean, he was very good to Sharon. He was really just like the best dad ever, yeah. Really, to Sharon and my mum and aunt. So, I mean...
He was the glue that kept the family together.
Absolutely. And I think they were so lucky, I think, to have grown up with such a wonderful mum and dad. Like, they were just, I suppose he's kind of, we're all very close as an extended family. Like, there's eight cousins. And obviously my three aunts and my mom, and I think he himself and my nanny, it's a testament to them and how they raised their family that we're all so close still. And it's
and
just
the nanny, your nanny died in 2014.
She did, Christmas Day. Yeah.
So he was on his own for 7 years or thereabouts.
So
and he insisted on being independent.
So he was really very, very independent. Now, we tried to, in the last few years, we've tried to get him to live. I think all of my aunts have tried to get him to live with them.
Yeah,
he wasn't having any of that. So we all stayed. Like, he had someone 24/7. We all were there all the time. Yeah. But yeah, he was a very strong person. He lost his dad very young, and I think he had very good coping skills. So, you know, he obviously missed my nanny terrible, but he was just very strong.
And where is he from originally?
Mayo. He's from Mayo. Proud Mayo man. And
what did he do? What was his job?
Well, he was a busman in Dublin, but I mean, the stories that he would tell us about his previous jobs were amazing. I mean, he'd talk about farming, he'd talk about being in a board house in England, and the landlady would have a monkey, and he'd tell the we never knew whether the stories were real or not. But
that
didn't really matter.
It didn't matter.
I think it was only until we got older we used to be like, Randall, was that story true? And he'd be like, you'll never know.
Like, of course, yeah. So
and he hung out with you a lot, did he?
Yeah, I mean, when he kind of got in his worst years, like, we would mind him, and we'd all take a Friday night, which for a bunch of 20-year-olds would be a tough thing to do, but not really for us, because, I mean, we were really happy to do it. And like, he'd say, oh, thanks for minding me, but really he'd be minding us. He'd be making the tea, making the breakfast, and it was just...
Oh, did he do that sneaky thing that grandparents often do, you know, give you things that your parents wouldn't normally give you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
And I think my nanny was probably a bit of a divil for that. Yeah. Now, she'd be, you know, I remember as kids, and I'm sure, Alison, you remember as well, we'd have bottles of tea with sugar.
Right.
You know, that was just the standard. You go to nanny for, and she was we called her nanny with the bottle. Because she'd give you a bottle of tea. Yeah. So my granddad, he would have been saying he had an awful sweet tooth for a diabetic. But custard was his thing. He loved custard. So, you know, he'd come over and you'd get custard with four spoons of sugar.
Sean.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a very tight family.
Oh, unbelievable, right? Yeah. You can't whisper without everybody knowing what's happening in the family. Yeah.
That's fine sometimes, but when you're trying to break down the wall and get in to
It was a tight-knit community, and I was I'm a Southsider as well, so to go into a Northside family was tough going.
Watch yourself there now.
Yeah, so,
how did you and Amy meet?
Oh, we met where all great love stories start, in little place called Coppers there up on Harker Street. The downstairs in Coppers. I think you were out on a college night out, and I was just out with the lads, and it was meant to be. The stars aligned that night.
Yeah. And how long was it, like, because introducing somebody like that to the rest, you know, the extended family, and particularly Larry, the granddad who you loved so much, how long did it take to introduce Sean?
It was a very short time, because I think Sean was maybe...
I was ambushed.
We were probably only on our maybe second or third date, and I remember we went out to St. Anne's for a walk, and I said, Sean, after, he said, oh, do you want to come back to my house for a cup of tea? And my mum will probably be there, and I knew my granddad would be there as well. And Sean arrived back, and the whole family were there, like my aunts, like my auntie Sharon's there. I think your mum might have been there, Alison.
The whole family.
My granddad. my mum, my dad, my brother, everyone was there. So Sean got to meet them all at once.
Yeah. And Larry was there winking and nodding across the table to Amy, thinking I couldn't see, you know, saying, oh, great Southside man there, great Southside. So, yeah, I was totally ambushed. Amy said, oh, yeah, just my mum and dad will be there and the whole family. So it was great fun.
And I suppose Larry had to approve. Oh, most important.
That was 100%,
very important. Amy and her granddad were like best friends. I've never seen a relationship like it. It was unbelievable. And if I didn't get his approval, that was me gone.
Yeah.
So we hit it off fairly quickly.
You hit it off very well.
Yeah. And Alison, you were with Mark.
Yes.
Larry never met.
He never met Mark. Now my granddad was, he was like, oh sure, I'd have to knit you a man, he say, because I was so picky. But I said before, very proud Mayo man, and I was out with my friends one night in the Camden actually, and he it was the night of the All Ireland final, and Mayo had made it into the final, which was a big thing. And he always said, oh, I'd love to see Mayo in the final. And that's where I met my boyfriend that night. Ah. So I was like,
he sent you a fella.
So yeah, he's also afraid of heights and will also be doing the skydives.
Yeah. So this just gets on to why a skydive? Was it something that Larry wanted to do or?
Not necessarily. I'd say my poor granddad, if he knew we were skydiving, he'd be saying, what are you doing? But I had spoken to him about it before, because it was always something that I would like to do, and I wanted obviously to do it with family. And he was like, oh, you know, that's very brave and stuff. But it's more, I suppose, when my granddad passed away, we wanted to raise money for charity. Obviously, for the Irish Heart Foundation was our chosen charity. And it was just because he was such a big character, we wanted to do something extra special for him. Right. And I think skydiving is probably maybe one of the biggest things you could possibly do to raise money. So I think that's kind of how the idea came about. And granddad would always say, oh, the sky's the limit. So we were like, right, we'll go to the sky.
There you go. Be nice on the t-shirt, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Actually.
The sky's the limit.
Yeah, we should get that.
That's a great idea.
I can do Mark the whole thing for you.
Brilliant.
I love that sort of thing. The sky's the limit. This is sort of your bucket list, but he had his own bucket list.
He did. So a few years ago, I was sitting down with him today. He's like, granddad, what kind of things would you like to do? Because he was really outgoing. And he kind of listed a few off. So he had the Guinness Storehouse, Titanic Museum in Belfast. He had Bloom. There was a few others that unfortunately we didn't really get to because COVID hit straight after. But we did make it to the Titanic in Belfast. And like, I remember the day we went, like he wasn't even too well at the time, but he was like, right, no, I'm going, that's it. Once he made up his mind, and we drove up and he had the best day ever. Now, we got lost on the way home.
He thought
that was hilarious. And the Guinness Storehouse as well, he loved that. But I remember the Titanic Museum in particular, he wasn't great on his feet at the time, and you could hire the electric scooters. So he said, granted, why don't you get
the mobility scooters?
He said, I'll jump on one of them. And you had to get some kind of training. Like the lady that was giving them out was like, look, we need to make sure he can use it, okay? He's like, no, I'm grand. He had the speed up.
Straight full, up to 10, yeah.
Myself and Sean were like, oh, it's going to knock
for
people over.
Yes.
He loved it.
You mentioned COVID there, and did he get COVID or was he in hospital for something else?
We were very lucky he didn't get COVID,
but he was in hospital during
he had heart failure. He had lots of medical conditions, including heart failure, and he had quite a bad exacerbation of heart failure and ended up being admitted to hospital, and unfortunately, you know, he decompensated then at that stage. But we were always so thankful that he didn't get COVID, because I think for him, it would have been just, you know, it was a difficult time.
But still, you couldn't visit him.
In the hospital, no. Visiting was very restricted, which was extremely difficult for us. And like a lot of people in the country, it's been so difficult. Visiting was totally restricted. So it was like one visitor at a time, which was really hard. But I suppose he was in and out of hospital a lot during COVID, and his phone at one stage was acting up a little bit, and we were trying to get in contact with someone in the hospital to try and fix it for him. So I said, you know what, I'm going to write him an old fashioned letter.
Right.
So the letter went in, I remember posting it to Beaumont Hospital, and he wrote back to me. So I still have a letter from him. It's very sentimental, but that was just a really nice day for him. He thought that was the best thing ever, because obviously in his time, that was how they communicated. For me, it was so strange. It was nice.
Have you got the letter?
I do, yeah.
Right. Do you mind?
No. I can, yeah.
You brought in a photo album, isn't it? All
this, so this is like a little photo book we made for him. I made for him a few Christmases ago. And it's kind of all the different photos of things we did together, kind of. So there's like, we have the Guinness Storehouse in it, St. Dan's, Bloom. We went to Dynamo, the magician in the tree arena.
Right.
And he got to meet Dynamo.
He wanted
to hang around after, and Dynamo happened to be there. And fair play to him, he waited and shook hands with my granddad and everything. So that was interesting. And then there's the time where...
He pushed around the hospital in a wheelchair.
We went to visit him in the hospital and we went to the little cafe down in Beaumont Hospital. Beaumont Hospital were amazing to him. All the times he was in and out, and he was like, "Amy, hop into that wheelchair there and I'll bring you down to the nurses." I was like, "Granddad, you can't be doing that. Like, they'll give out to you. Like, you know, you should be in the wheelchair." No, get in.
Yeah.
Just, the nurses were breaking their heart laughing when he came back pushing me.
So he is as happy as Larry, isn't it? Really?
literally as happy as Larry. Yeah.
His name was made from.
Yeah. Right, go on then.
So I don't, do you want me to?
If you feel comfortable enough doing it.
So he said, "My dear Amy, I got your letter and I was overjoyed to read it. One of my favourite grandchildren. I always like to hear from you. I hope to be home soon and we will get drunk. Ha ha. The hospital is awful in this weather. Please turn over."
Nice.
Now, sorry for the writing. I hope you're keeping well and you are working hard. I don't know when your letter will reach you. So post to Lawrence Ward in Beaumont Hospital and I will get it. We are lucky. I have to thank your mum and aunts for being so good to me. Thank you again for everything. So bye bye for now, your favourite granddad."
Yeah.
So it's lovely to have that.
Yeah.
So that was June 2020.
In his handwriting.
Yeah, of course. And he found a pen in the hospital. Yeah. He has on the front of it, I don't know if you can see this, "To my granddaughter Amy Byrne, kiss kiss. Will someone come to my aid and get this downstairs?" So he said, I remember I was talking to him after, and he's like, "I was trying to get someone to bring it down to post for me." I was like, "Oh, the poor nurses, there's so much to be doing during COVID."
Okay, so it's a tandem jump. Now, people will be familiar with the tandem jump from "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here." So you're strapped to somebody else. Oddly, you're in front, aren't you? The person's sort of on your back.
Yeah.
You sit in their lap.
You sit in their lap, and then they have to basically push it out.
And what height is it? Do you know what height you're jumping from?
I think it's 10,000 feet, isn't it?
Right.
13,000. We went for the extra tree. Oh, yeah.
Right.
13,000 feet.
I tell you, three freaks.
What's that in? Is that I don't know. It's a long way up.
Oh, it's a long way up.
It's a long way up. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And you vertical, Sean?
Yes.
Probably not a good idea then, jumping out of the plane.
No, absolutely not. So, every Christmas I get to help Amy's dad put up the Christmas lights on the house and I go up about 4 steps to the ladder and my head starts spinning.
Okay.
And in my mind I'm saying, "You're fine, you're absolutely, you know, you're safe," but whatever happens in my brain, I just start spinning and I have to grab onto whatever's around me. So yeah, this is going to be a big challenge.
Out of your comfort zone.
100%.
Yeah. I jumped out of a plane once.
Did you?
Yeah.
How was that scary?
You're fine and it'll be all I know exactly what'll happen because you'll all be laughing
and
you're going up and there's that, you know, that nervous thing, nerviness. You're all there, you know. And then what happens, this is the just to prepare you for it, Sean.
Okay.
Just prepare you for it.
Thanks, Ray.
So you get to the height, right, and next thing they switch off the engine. You're going and it's all laughing crack and next thing, nothing.
Silence.
Oh my gosh.
Then they open the door. This air gushes in.
Oh,
you look
no
out
way.
And you can see the ground and there might be people moving around like ants. and there's big articulated trucks that look like matchboxes.
This was the biggest feel letter.
I'm just preparing you for it.
I know, I'm trying to create a mental image so it's not as much of a shock, but I think you've created a good one there.
Yeah. But the important thing is you're strapped to somebody else and he or she is a professional.
Yeah,
they've done it hundreds of times before.
And also all the men who are jumping are all afraid of heights. Mark and Darren, our cousin, and a lot of our cousins are terrified of heights.
Right.
Which is why they are not doing the jump. But they're definitely, by the way, helping with the fundraiser this
weekend.
Which is great. Yeah, fantastic.
My sister, Michelle, mad with quiz questions, but they all would have loved to jump, but everyone's terrified.
How many are doing it in total?
the skydive, yeah. Five of us.
Five,
so it's
right.
The three of us and then Mark, Alison, the boyfriend, and my brother Darren.
Right, and it's in Clumbalogan, County Offaly.
It is, yeah, with the Irish Parachute Club, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Brilliant. Very exciting.
It is. Extremely it is exciting, really exciting. Yeah, yeah. Now, I think the closer it's getting, the more I thought I'd be fine. And the closer it's getting, I'm like, oh, I'm actually a bit nervous.
You have to shout Larry's name up there.
Oh, yeah. We will. Oh, we will.
Out the door.
Yeah. And will you, will there be, there will be camera, video.
I presume, yes, well, yes. We'll manage to record.
I think we will.
I shouted a few expletives. You might do that as well.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Seemingly it's quite healthy, you know, because, you know, just get you over the nerves. But it's going to be good crack.
The weeks are flying away, and it would be in Granda's birthday on the 12th of April, so we're doing it on the 15th.
Right.
So a few days later. So it's a nice way to mark that as well.
So GoFundMe.com, Skydive for the Irish Heart Foundation, and that's where you'll find the family, Amy and family, who are jumping out of a plane in memory of Granddad Larry.
Yeah.
Great to see you. Enjoy.
Thanks,
enjoy.
Ray. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Kevin in Westport has done the maths. I'm reluctant to do maths live on air, so thanks, Kevin, for doing that. 13,000 feet equals 2.462 miles. I think that's why they say it in feet, because like nearly 2.5 miles sounds a lot higher. Ray, stop. It's nothing like that. It's fab. As soon as you land, you'll want to go back up, says Michelle. I was just having a bit of crack, Michelle. And Aina's been on with such strong Irish nominations at the Oscars. Get ready to cringe with gombeen Irish accents, jokes and remarks about alcohol, potatoes, top of the morning to you, etc. Stereotypes galore. I'm just saying, says Aina. Maybe it won't be like that, Aina. Maybe it won't. Joining me now, an Irish woman who had some pretty big news this week. She has just been named on the 2023 Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Previous names on the list were Paul Mescal or Mescal, Saoirse Ronan or Ronan, and Rory McIlroy. So how does it feel? Well, let's put the question to Gráinne Mullins of Grá Chocolates in our Galway studio.
Hi,
Gráinne. Congratulations.
Hello. Thank you. I'm over the moon. I'm so thrilled.
Yeah. So this brings you to a bigger audience and your product to a bigger audience.
Absolutely. It's so incredible to get recognition like this. I could have only have dreamt of a moment like this. It's crazy.
And what age are you?
I'm 29.
Okay, so just got in there. Just
yes, just about. It was my last chance.
Yeah. So Grá Chocolates, it's a brilliant story. Your story is a brilliant story. So bring us back to the beginning. It's a very good place to start. You had always an interest in food.
I did, absolutely. So growing up, I just love food. My family, we always had good food around the house. We had our own little garden. So I was just in and out cooking all the time whenever I could. My parents used to say that I used to just be baking and cooking anytime I had a chance. And then I suppose that continued on. Then I was a teenager. I did my first work experience in a kitchen in my local town. And then from there, I got a job out of that. So I was working in kitchens from the age of 16.
Right.
And I just loved it.
They're sort of high pressure. Hot, sweaty places.
They sure are.
Yeah, and,
very,
and did
very
you
high-pressing.
Did you enjoy that aspect of it?
I did, because it was really, it was a big team effort. So when you have an incredible team working together for one aim, and the attention to detail, the intricate work, it was really incredible to see the teamwork that goes into making a production or to making your whole restaurant work. So really, really special places to work and definitely high pressure, no doubt about that.
And were you cooking at home for the rest of the family as well?
Not when I was working so much in kitchens. There wasn't much time to be at home. You'd be spending a lot of your time morning, noon and night at work. You saw your work colleagues more than you saw anyone else.
Right. And then you went to the south of France and...
I did, yeah. So I took a year out from my science degree and decided to travel to the south of France. And I got a job in a Michelin star restaurant just outside of Aix-en-Provence in the beautiful sunshine. And from there, I was promoted to chef pâtissier, so the head pastry chef, in less than a year of arriving. So I was absolutely over the moon. Working my dream job. Mm. And then I came back to Ireland and worked in a few amazing restaurants across the country as well.
Now, you know the old saying that cooking is art, bakery is science.
Yes.
And probably no coincidence then that you were parking a science degree and became the sort of patisserie chef in a Michelin star restaurant.
Completely. baking and pastry requires so much attention to detail, following recipes, following production, following a lot of, I suppose, standards to get the right result. So you have to make sure you are methodical and you can follow something in order to get the right result. So it definitely stood to me. And even, I suppose, the science of the explaining.
That's where the thing. So you know why self-raising flour raises things.
Exactly.
You know why you have to add baking powder as opposed to soda, whatever it is. So you know all that and you know the science of it.
Exactly. So I had a huge interest in the science behind it, or why adding too much sugar, or what you can substitute for eggs, or all of the kind of sciencey side behind it. So because I knew that, I had this different talent, I suppose, to other chefs working in kitchens. So it was a good talent to have, especially it was around the time when I suppose that kind of molecular gastronomy, using a lot of the different powders and things, was getting really, really well known around. So a lot of those powders were just simple ingredients, but they were just called crazy names. But I was able to explain to people where it came from, what's the origin of it, and have a deeper understanding within that food that we're eating every single day.
Molecular gastronomy. It's a bit up its own behind now, isn't it, really, that sort of thing?
It is. It's kind of past its kind of phase, but it was big quite a few years ago.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, it was incredible. El Bulli and all of the masters of that.
Yeah, yeah. So COVID came and upset your career trajectory, but in a good way.
Absolutely. So I suppose it wasn't good at the start. I had just won the Young Chef of the Year competition. So I was over the moon and thinking 2020 was going to be my year and all of these ideas in my head. But we very quickly went into a lockdown and event after event and all of these things were just being cancelled. And I was struggling to kind of keep my head above water and kind of realise what do I do with myself, because I'd come from being working about 60 hours a week to all of a sudden not having anywhere to go. What I was doing, I was baking every single day. I was cooking every single day for my family. I was trying not to repeat what I was making for them. One of my brother turned to me at one stage and he goes, "Grania, we're all going to get diabetes in lockdown." But we were very popular with the neighbours, dropping over treats to them as well. And then one thing I did was I decided to make hand-painted Easter eggs for all my friends and family as a little pick-me-up treat.
Right.
So yeah, I just made these beautiful Easter eggs. I posted them on social media, so the Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And from there, loads of people started reaching out, asking where could they purchase them, could they buy them? And it just wasn't possible then. I'd only one mould.
Okay, now just stop there for a minute, Grania, because I'm intrigued by this. Because people tell stories like this and it sounds nearly fairy tale-like, that they stumbled into something. So there was no strategy, there was no plan at this stage.
None at all.
None.
It was actually just, I went on a walk with my mum
and
she said to me, "Grania, this could be your business." She said, "People are reaching out looking for something you're making and this could be it." And I kind of paused and I thought about it and I said, "Yeah, okay, maybe." And so I just started... I started doing business courses. So I reached out to my local enterprise office. They put me on the digital Start Your Own Business course. Mm-hmm. And I did two other business courses that were kind of been able to do in my own time. So I did three business courses simultaneously while trying to set up a business plan. So I kind of took that as my full-time job.
Right.
And I was creating new flavors and posting about them. And within the next 2.5 months, I had developed a very basic business model. I was going to be launching online, a little chocolate business online. And that was just kind of, it was kind of a push for myself to just kind of keep myself busy. And I even said to my mum, "So what if nobody buys when I launch tomorrow?" And she goes, "Well, what have you lost? Only the price of a website and a little bit of your time, and you've learned from that." So it was, yeah, it was definitely a learning and to keep me busy at that time.
And coincidentally, it's local enterprise office week, isn't it?
I heard that on
Morning Ireland the other morning. Yeah, so they would have helped you in a big way. And I've been on your website and it's very attractive website. It's mouthwatering.
Thank you.
Attractive. And the name Grow Chocolates obviously comes from your name, and nice play on words because Grow means love. And so it's all good there. Was that easy to land on that name?
I don't think so.
No.
I had a few names that I'd come up with
and
I named them out to my friends
and
family. I don't remember them now at this stage. I'd be too embarrassed to say it because everyone was like, "These are awful names. Where did these come from?" And I was like, "These are the suggested names." And everyone was like, "No, they don't work." So I got the idea for Grow Chocolates. It was actually a mentor of mine. I was talking to her at the time and she suggested it. And I said, "I wouldn't like to name it after myself." She's like, "You're not really. You're just naming it after love." And I said, "True." And it has a nice connection to it without being overpowering.
Yes.
So it was... perfect little name. Said it to friends and family at the time, and they said yes. That everyone was resounding.
It makes complete sense. It makes complete sense. Now these are works of art. Yeah, your chocolates are.
Yeah.
Some of them look too good to eat, Gráinne.
I call it edible art.
And edible art, right. Okay.
Yeah, and I always say they're made for people to enjoy. It's art that people are meant to enjoy because not only do they look beautiful, but they taste beautiful as well. And that's one of the most important things for me.
Like lovely, beautiful gifts. Like you wouldn't probably buy them for yourself unless you're, you know, and they talk about self, you know, compassion and all that and loving yourself. So maybe you would, but they look like gifts. And that's where you make, I suppose, your big killings, Valentine's Day, Christmas, Mother's Day, is it?
That's it, absolutely. So we're very kind of seasonal those times of year. But what I do love, so often with people buying for their own birthdays or their own treat to themselves because they might not have a Valentine to buy for. Mm. So it's actually lovely because we handwrite all the gift notes as well. So if you write a note on the website, we'll handwrite it for you. So I love getting the ones that are people saying to me, from me, a little bit of self-love.
Right, yeah,
but it is a lot of gifting and it's really special that our product, our chocolates are being chosen to celebrate these special moments within people's lives, and it's often moments that are full of love or gras. So it's really sharing the love throughout. Yeah. It's really nice.
So from hand painting Easter eggs for friends and family to now, tell us about your setup.
Yeah, so my parents very kindly let me set up at the kitchen counter at the very beginning, and then I convince them to allow me to turn our shed in the back garden into a chocolate factory. So that was step number two. And we were there for nearly 2 years, still while I was in the hunt for trying to find a bigger space for us. So, but I took over the entire house, I have to say. They're very patient. But last summer, we got into a bigger chocolate factory in Ballybrit. So we now have a space that was 30 times the size of our old space.
Mm-hmm.
And we have loads of space to make our beautiful chocolates.
How many people have you got working for you?
So we're quite a seasonal business. So at the moment we've 18, which is great. It's incredible to think that a little business that didn't even exist three years ago now helps to employ 18 people. So pretty incredible.
How is that sitting with you?
You know, the responsibility.
Don't
have a chance to
think about it. You don't, right? Okay.
No, but it's amazing. It's really special as well, and to build connections with people and to see them developing. We've some people that have been with us over 2 years, and it's really nice to have them growing with us. And then people might leave and come back again, and it's an incredible feeling to feel like people can be themselves in my business. So it's really nice.
So you're on the Forbes 30 Under 30. How did you find out about that?
I got an email. So I was at a meeting on Tuesday morning, and I just had a quick scan through my emails after the meeting, and I read Welcome to Forbes 30 Under 30, and I clicked into it, and there was loads of text, and it all went blurry. So I got out of it again, and I went in a few minutes later, and it again went all blurry. And then I picked up the phone, called my boyfriend, and he was like, "What does it say?" And I was like, I don't know.
So, well, was it going blurry because you didn't believe it, or is there something wrong with your phone?
I didn't believe it. I was just overwhelmed.
Oh, you're overwhelmed.
I was just overwhelmed.
Okay, yes.
My own eyes couldn't even read it. So I needed to get to the office and sit down and actually read what was written in front of me. And I got there and read it, and I really just couldn't believe it. I was in shock. And the news was already out there before I actually realised as well. So even people were messaging me, saying it to me, and I hadn't had a chance to catch up on it all. So it's been a bit of a blur since. I've had so many congratulations and lovely messages.
And what are the practical implications of it?
Well, just for us, it's a bit about the awareness throughout the whole of Europe. It's the recognition as well. And it's just a huge moment for us, for a stepping stone if we want to grow the business further and start exporting. It's just a huge recognition for us for the growth and going forward. I'm just over the moon.
Des in Dublin says, "Don't you just love it, Gráinne, that is. Humble, articulate, smart and now successful. Brilliant. Aww. Well done, girl," says Des in Dublin.
Thank you.
That's lovely. There you go. Him and Forbes recognise your talents.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah. So it's Gráinne chocolates and edible art. That's a brilliant description. You've obviously worked on that. And too good to eat, but they look amazing and they taste even better. And congratulations, Gráinne Mullins, on being on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. We'll speak again, I'm sure. Good luck.
Fabulous.
See you.
Look
bye.
Forward to
bye.
It.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, tomorrow we're remembering Glenroe. Yes, Glenroe. This year marks 40 years since Glenroe hit our screens. Started in 1983. And tomorrow we have Biddy, Mary and Michelle. That'll be Mary McAvoy, Geraldine Plunkett and Isabel Mann. And we'd love your memories overnight, like, or even now, ray@rte.ie. And we can share them with Mary and Geraldine and Isabel tomorrow. When we remember, it's so iconic, so iconic. Glenroe started in 1983. Tonight, right up to date, the Irish Album of the Year shortlist, the Choice Music Prize. It's happening in Vicar Street tonight. Choice Music Prize. And I see our friends, the Mary Wallopers, are in the shortlist for the Irish Album of the Year. So we wish them luck and we'll play a tune, I think. That'd be a good idea. The Mary Wallopers, yes. Gurmaga Coit, thank you very much. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Catherine has been on to us from Bantry in West Cork. She says, at 75, I was always a letter writer. It's so special to receive a letter in the post and to send one. We should keep it going. And so say all of us. And they're in already. Aaron has been talking about Glenroe on text. Glenroe was on when I was going to school. I absolutely loved the barmaid, Michelle. I was infatuated with her. She was an absolute stunner. Is that a word people use anymore? Well, she's be in tomorrow, Aaron. And I'll pass on your compliments to Isabel when she's here with us, as we remember Glenroe, 40 years on. OK, we've two quizzers standing by. To answer three questions each, and we have a prize, which is a two-night stay for two people in the River Lee Hotel, part of the family-run Irish luxury hotel group, the Doyle Collection. They have a deal going at the moment, and if you book and use the promo code CHAMPAGNE when booking directly on their website, you will get a free bottle of champagne on arrival. Nice deal. It has a beautiful riverside location, the River Lee Hotel, luxurious bedrooms and dining and drinks options to suit every taste. DoyleCollection.com/Cork for all details. Hello, Helen Murphy in Limerick.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. Limerick got a bit of snow?
A small bit, but it wasn't bad. It's about 6 degrees here now.
Is it? Right, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But wasn't there schools? A couple of schools didn't open today.
Yeah. I'd say, though, they might have been more rural ones because, like, the city roads are fine.
Yes. As they most often are, aren't they?
Yeah, they get around to them.
And what are you up to today?
I'm finished work now, so I'm just chilling for the evening. I'm going to cook the dinner, wait for my son to come home. He's on a shopping spree.
Right, so hold on. What's the dinner then this evening?
Oh, steak.
Nice.
Steak and potatoes, yeah. Quick and easy.
Excuse me for a second, I need to cough. No, sorry. So, will you be, is it medium, rare or well done?
Medium, rare, yeah.
And what age is your son?
He's 19.
Right, and what's he buying?
Cahal. He said he's going shopping for summer clothes, but I think he's a bit early yet.
but here's the thing.
Bad day for it.
No, but I'm with him though, because, you know, by the time we get the weather, everything's gone.
Yeah, he won't get cut out like that anyhow. He's the right clothes horse.
Is he right?
Yeah.
You're a big fan of the movies. You'll be watching the Oscars, I presume.
Yes, I was. So hoping now the Banshees of Inisherin will win a few. And I'd love to see Colin Farrell again and the Oscar, really, to be honest. Big fan.
Great. You're up against Robbie Vahey in Dublin. How are you doing, Robbie?
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Not too bad.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Robbie.
What are you up to, Robbie?
I in work today, Ray. Just kill the last couple of hours before we get home.
Right. What's you work?
Know? Work. I work in a transport company there up on Baldon JMC.
Right.
So we nationwide deliveries, you know.
So you'll be looking at the weather.
That's all we've been doing all day.
Yeah. And what are you seeing?
Well, it's bucketing in Dublin, but it's everywhere else in the country you'd be concerned about. Donegal, Cork.
Yeah.
Limerick, all the west, the whole west coast, all the way down, you know.
Yeah. It looks, now I know nothing, but it looks too wet for the snow to stick.
there is that. It's bucketing down up here now at the moment.
That's very technical, isn't it, Robbie?
Yeah. Technically, it's bucketing down or too wet.
It's all the language there is very technical. I'd say Matt Aaron are shaking in their boots now. I think that Robbie and I are going to take over from them. Celebrations tonight in the house?
Celebration tonight, my daughter Emily, yes, 12 years of age today. So, our youngest. That should be the crack, you know. So she's all for the joys of spring, you know. She got tickets this morning for Dermot Kennedy, so she's looking forward
brilliant.
To the show.
Brilliant, yeah. 12, yeah. We were discussing this in our house. 12 is a big age, isn't it?
Huge.
Yeah. Because I suppose traditionally it's when you go from primary school to secondary school.
Well, this is it. Like, it's one eye on first year, but I mean, you're still trying to remember you're 12 years of age, you know. But it's just like everything just is that bigger, faster, stronger, you know.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday, Emily. Hope you have a brilliant, brilliant night. Okay.
Thank you.
So, three questions each, Helen and Robbie. I'll give you the category, then you will tell me if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue, you get a point for a correct answer. If you go without a clue, you get 2 points. For a correct answer, whoever has the most on points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Helen, it's music to start us off.
Okay.
Do you want a clue or not?
No.
No. Okay, for 2 points. Who is this?
You know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
Who's that?
Michael Bublé.
It is Michael Bublé, yes. Straight in there with confidence. Say again? Yeah, you're glad you didn't take a clue.
I'm glad he didn't take a clue.
You get 2 points for that. Okay, Robbie, under pressure from the off. Music, do you want to take a clue or not?
No clue. We have to go along with the line, yeah.
Okay, for two, who is this?
Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. Well, I'm in love with your body.
Who's that?
That is Ed Sheeran.
It is Ed Sheeran for 2 points. Shape of You, well done. Good start from both of you. Second category, Helen, TV characters. TV characters. Do you want a clue or not?
No.
Okay. So I need the name of the character, not the actor. Okay?
Okay.
For 2 points. So which TV character is this?
Now, let's meet the latest new boyfriend. I'm not even allowed to answer my own phone now. I go to answer my phone, I get a freaking rugby tackle. Oh, yes. And Mick is a secret. Oh, now, he must be ugly.
Well?
Mrs. Brown.
It is. Agnes Brown, Mrs. Brown. A.K.A. Brendan O'Carroll. I see they're doing a new mini-series for the BBC, which is great. 2 points for you, which is great as well. Well done, Helen. Robbie.
Yeah, no pressure.
TV, no pressure. TV characters, what are you going to do?
No clue.
No clue. And again, I need the character's name as opposed to the actor's name. Who or which TV character is this?
You won't have a cup.
Are you sure now it's hot?
Just a little drop, just a teeny tiny bit. Go on, 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 go on.
Well,
deadly, Mrs. Doyle.
Yeah, deadly it is, Mrs. Doyle, yeah. Pauline MacLean, Mrs. Doyle, 2 points there, yeah. How many go-ons were there? A lot of go-ons there. Okay, now we're onto the final question. It's four all, so it's down to the wire. The final category, Helen, is wildlife broadcasters. Wildlife broadcasters.
No clue. I'm just trying to...
Are you saying you've no clue or you don't want a clue?
I'm trying to put Robbie under pressure here.
Okay, so wildlife broadcasters, for 2 points, who is this?
But hang on a minute, what's that? Looks like something else had the same idea.
Have a look at this little blighter. Crikey, he's as fat as mud. These water holes are just crawling with wildlife. There's yabbies and fish biting at me, which is perfect for these little freshies.
Who's that?
Is it Steve Irwin?
It is the late Steve Irwin, yes. 2 points, well done. Right, Robbie. Pressure. Helen, you can't do anything else. Robbie, you've only one choice, really, don't you?
Obviously, no clue.
No clue, yeah, yeah.
This is it.
So, if you get it right, you bring us to a tie-break situation. If you get it wrong, Helen is today's winner. Good luck with this. For 2 points, can you name this wildlife broadcaster?
Some have speculated that I've seen more of the natural world than anyone else. Well, it's certainly true that I have been extremely fortunate to spend my life travelling the world to film and share the wonders of nature.
Who's that?
That is Richard Attenborough.
It's not. It's not. It's David Attenborough.
David Attenborough.
And you should have said Attenborough, shouldn't I?
Yeah, well, you see, Richard was the guy that starred in Jurassic Park.
Right, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Bad luck.
David is the...
Not to worry. There you go. In for a penny, in for a pound. Well
yeah,
done.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Robbie. Listen, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Keep Cup. And because you were so close, we're going to make it two. Because okay, so you can have you can have one in the truck and one in the car or whatever. Give one to Emily for her birthday, and enjoy the celebrations tonight, Robbie.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thank
to you. See you. Bye. 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 That was close, Helen. That was very close.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was so afraid I was going to make a show of myself.
No, well, you didn't at all. You got six out of possible six, and you won the prize. And the prize is a 2-night stay for two people. In the Riverlea Hotel down in Cork.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I love that hotel. I love it.
Brilliant.
I'm so looking forward to it. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
DoyleCollection.com/Cork to see what's in store for you, but you seem to know that already. Well done, Helen. Mind yourself.
Brilliant.
See
thank you
now.
You.
Bye,
thank
bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Weather Watch, lots of snow on the ground in Galway, says some person. And Keith and Clare says they should do a rerun of Glenroe. I wonder. Yeah, you don't know because you remember these things to rose-tinted glasses. But yeah, we'll put it to the powers that be here in RTE and see what they say. I'm joined now in studio by child and adolescent psychotherapist, Dr. Coleman Nocter. How are you doing, Coleman?
Good, thanks, Ray.
I was mentioned you at the top because I was telling people you were coming in. I was also saying that there are changes to the school curriculum. One of them is that they're introducing a modern European language, I think, at third class. And I was saying, off the top of my head, that children find it easier to learn a language. So if you're going to learn a second language or a third language, it's probably better to do it at primary school as opposed to secondary school. Is that true or am I just making it up?
No, you're right. Yeah, there's research to back that up. I suppose the more entrenched we get in a language, the harder it is to learn another. So there's lots of evidence to suggest a lot of children are bilingual, but actually even younger than third class. I mean, when they start to speak, that they would speak both languages and have that, just have that elasticity in the brain that it's not, you know, they're not old dog, new tricks, the thing. But yeah, there's definitely research to support it. So, you know, the idea of introducing a European language for an hour a week from third class should be welcomed, in my view.
Definitely. The other thing is a new sex education curriculum, and this has attracted an awful lot of chat from the Taoiseach, from the President, from other places, from the Primary Schools Management Association. They're talking about a growing psychological contagion, particularly around transgender issues. I'm interested about this growing psychological contagion. Like, if children talk about something, do they go on to do it, or what's the story?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of concerns around awareness campaigns creating kind of more incidents of something, and not being entirely sure whether that's creating exactly an awareness or kind of, like, if you think about it from a mental health point of view, you know, the mental health promotion can sometimes feel like a mental illness promotion. Do you know what I mean? Where you kind of
have
you got this and this and this? Well, then you could have that, right?
Yes, yeah.
And that's very suggestive, and it's kind of, you know, and what you don't want is it to become that way. Do you know what I mean? Where you're almost, there's a difference between keeping something out of a curriculum and bringing it in. I would be a fan of a spiral curriculum. So you bring it in very, very basically and just address it, and then you address it more complex as the child gets older. Do you know what I mean? So it's not a question of we don't talk about that and we do talk about this. So, you know, in terms of inclusion, diversity in general terms would be something I would promote, say, for example, in primary school, then getting into more intricate conversation as somebody gets older. But I do think there has to be a space to have a conversation in the school. And so anything that's kind of taboo or not spoken about, we only narrow the kind of spaces that children can have those questions or ask those questions. So I think, again, it's like the well-being thing, you know, well-being is probably not best done in a workbook. You know, it's probably done through discussion.
Yes.
And so how something is taught is much more benefit, much more, you learn a lot more from that than what is supposed to be taught by a curriculum document. Do you know what I mean?
And I suppose there'll be question marks over that, particularly for teachers, because a lot of teachers aren't qualified to do this. They're not psychologists, you know, and they're dealing with sensitive things, and that's an issue, isn't it?
100%. And again, you know, I teach, and I would have my own preference for certain things, and I have to be very careful that I'm not, you know, I would come from a kind of a psychoanalytic point of view, but I have to teach other modalities as well, so not to kind of overly
colour,
not to colour it in a way that, you know. And again, I I welcome the flexibility for teachers to be able to do that, but it can, you know, we all have our pet subjects and we always have that, you know, and I think from the point of view of, you have to kind of, like, to make it uniform would be so difficult. Do you know what I mean? Because it's each individual going in with it.
The other thing I'm intrigued by, and you'd be the perfect person to give an opinion on this, like, we talk about things being age appropriate, but age, and not to use an old cliche, but age is just a number. So, for example, and you would have seen this in your work, you could get 4 10-year-olds who'd be at completely different levels of maturity.
Mm-hmm. And age is utterly arbitrary when it comes to children. Do you know what I mean? In terms of trying to, you know, the reason why we say this is a kind of a normal age for that is because it's normative. Yes. Most children are doing this by this time.
Yes.
But the outliers are equally as important. You know, it's physiologically, you can see kids in sixth class and the girl is 5'7" and the boy is 4'2". You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they'll all, I would always say, you know, it's like popcorn. You know, they're all under the same conditions, but they pop at different times. Do you know what I mean? From the point of view of...
Yeah, so how then do you deal with age-appropriate sensitive issues? It's difficult,
it's difficult.
It?
And again, I always say you have to tailor it to the child, right? And so these issues, it's kind of much more, I'd be guided, from a parent's point of view, much more guided by temperament than I would by age. Do you know what I mean? What a child is able for. But the world that we live in, Ray, means that we have to bring these discussions far earlier than ideally we would like to. Do you know what I mean? So because children are exposed to so much, you almost have to be the informed conversation starter.
As a parent.
Yeah.
As a parent,
and,
yes.
And for schools as well. Do you know what I mean? And like, and things like, we've had to talk about terrorism. We've had to talk about...
This is at home. At home. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And again, you have an Ariana Grande concert and then that affects children. You have global pandemics. You have the murder of a primary school teacher and you have to explain to children why there's a minute silence in their class. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So we have to be... childhood is shrinking and we're kind of shrinking it because we're bringing in these conversations, but the cost of not having the conversation is greater
higher
than the
cost
of having it.
Okay.
Do you know?
Difficult.
Tricky, yeah. And we haven't even mentioned pornography and intimacy and all that sort of stuff, which means, you know, we're having to have those conversations earlier, the risk of having those versus the risk of not having those. You know, it's really difficult time to be a parent and a teacher.
And the world has changed beyond recognition since the last curriculum was introduced because of smartphones, you know, and the access to, you know, porn 24/7, all that sort of thing. So there you go.
And the curriculum has to reflect the world we live in rather than the ones we'd like to live in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's what Leo said, the real world. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Hi, Ray and Coleman. Last time you were on, that's you, Coleman, you briefly mentioned exclusion and I felt I needed to get in touch to ask for advice. My son's group of friends all organised and booked their post-leaving cert trip and didn't invite him. He wasn't even aware they were going until someone told me about the trip. It's heartbreaking. He's now 18, so an adult. What can I say to make him feel better? What can I advise him to do about the situation?
Yeah, I think I probably mentioned exclusion in that it's really difficult to manage. Do you know what I mean? Because you can't force people to invite someone, you know, and especially as, and like, he's 18, so he's an adult, essentially, you know, technically. Again, I would say it's about nurturing him and protecting him through it. And for him to, if that group of people don't see his value, you have to recognise it. And again, it's the old piece of advice about finding your tribe, you know. And
I was thinking that because I remember reading a piece and it stuck with me. I read it years ago about somebody who was completely excluded at secondary school and, you know, couldn't find anybody, no friends. And then when they went to university or third level, they found their tribe and it just, they just changed nearly overnight.
And I wrote about this last year. There was a girl, I got permission to do it. She had a terrible time in secondary school, excluded, all that sort of stuff, homeschooling, etc. And she got in touch with me a year after being in college. She had found her tribe. She was in a creative arts degree. She was engaging with people that were like-minded and she was absolutely thriving. And it was the environment that was actually holding her back. And it was this idea of, so how narrow the normative is within that space, that if you paint outside the lines at all, you risk that level of exclusion.
And you see, the smaller town you're in, the less likely you are to have a number of people who will, you know, share your interests.
And again, I suppose the benefit of this is he's 18 and he's heading into that. So that new chapter is about to begin for him. And I would really be pointing him towards the hope of that chapter being a lot better than the last one that he had.
Okay. I hope that works out. Coleman, our daughter is stealing money from us and really doesn't care about what we say or about the consequences. She has recently stolen nearly €200 from us, money that we had put by to pay for something. We continue to lock our bedroom door on the advice of a psychologist. We employed the psychologist for help with this and other issues. She's 17.
Yeah, again, the idea that there's other issues may suggest that this is one of a number of things for this girl. I come from a very kind of concrete view on that. I think wrongdoing is wrongdoing. There needs to be consequences to it. You know, there can be explanations as to why somebody might do something, but they're not necessarily excuses. I really think you should really work on trying to develop empathy for this girl and trying to see if she's not seeing the consequence of her actions. It's about trying to show her that. And, you know, sometimes we just bring in sanctions. You're not doing this, you're not doing that.
To develop her empathy.
Her empathy. Yes. Towards,
I think, know, I was wondering, yeah.
Yeah, towards other people. Because, you know, this idea of my actions have an impact on other people.
Yes.
Lots of people go through life without really developing a sense of that. And, you know, there's, you know, it could be narcissism. There's always that sort of side of things. And as she's 17, she's old enough to get it, but still old enough to do some work with that as well. But the consequences need to be there and sanctions need to be there for things like stealing. I would be fairly firm that that's something that doesn't happen in your family home and you don't make it acceptable.
I'm wondering about stealing. Is there a phase in your teenage years where you might go through, I don't know what it's about.
I think there's experiment, you know, and that's sort of, you know, the kind of rush sort of thing. And but it's not pervasive across the board for certain, like, I oftentimes wonder, what are you stealing for? Do you know, is there a drug habit? Is there something else going on? Is there people that she owes money to? They could be contributing factors to it. I mean, the experimentation of, you know, with alcohol or cigarettes or stealing, that sort of stuff, some of that's just teenage adventure. But usually it's tried, did nothing for me, and I move on.
Yeah. Okay, right. Okay, so she needs to develop empathy. She needs to know that her actions have consequences. Okay. Coman, my daughter is in Leaving Cert. She is a bright, beautiful girl with a great sense of humour and a great way with people. She's increasingly pessimistic in her outlook on life. It seems to be all around her Leaving Cert. She says she won't get the points for this or that and always talks herself down. How do I help her to switch that negative voice in her head and think more positively?
Yeah,
a lot of people will be listening to this one now.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways that's an Irish thing. You know, they kind of expect the worst and whatever happens to be a bonus sort of thing. And, you know, we kind of pride ourselves on that kind of martyrism in some respects. But I would think if she's generally bright in other ways in her life and it's just about Leaving Cert results, she's feeling the expectation of pressure. She's managing your expectations by saying, don't expect much of me because I'll only disappoint you. And the fear of failure is so huge, you know, in terms of, especially when mom or aunts and everyone's going, you'll be great and you'll be fantastic. Yeah. And I remember one group of young people saying potential. They hate that word, potential. You know, you've got such potential because it's pressure. Yeah.
It's pressure,
and so the idea of the fear of failure is like the idea of, you know, if I don't try, I won't fail. So you're better off not trying and failing than bursting yourself and falling short. And young teenage boys are notorious for this. They won't study because if they give it everything, they'll be exposed for... My mother used to say, Coleman could do anything. And that meant, but he's lazy. And there was no way I wasn't going to be lazy. Because if I started working, I was going to fall short of what her expectation was. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
So I had to keep being lazy. Do you know what I mean? So from the point of view of, for her, she's managing everyone else's expectations by saying...
So what can her parents do then?
And again, parents do this all the time. Like if you say, you know, we don't expect anything of you, then you don't believe in me,
right,
you know?
Oh
or
God,
if we want you to just,
win, yeah.
if you just want to do your best, then that's pressure, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But again, it's about trying to see that there are other things in life that are her strengths. Like her, if she's a personable kid, if she's likable, if she's sociable, it really doesn't matter. Like the Leaving Cert doesn't, like emotional intelligence will get you far further.
But when it's looming, you know, I know all those things. I know them now from a distance, you know, but when you are 16, 17, 18 and the Leaving Cert is looming, adults saying to you that the Leaving Cert doesn't really matter, it just falls on deaf ears, I think, does it?
Well, it does and it doesn't, because if you're saying it out of two sides of your mouth, you know, saying Leaving Cert doesn't matter, now go up and do 2 hours.
I
think that's the issue. But in terms of for her in this moment, she's just trying to manage the immediacy of the expectation. But actually saying to her, like, this isn't going to deter, like, you know, and give examples of people who maybe thrived after that or got there. And again, I would say, you know, there's far too much emphasis on this being the definition of your future. And inadvertently parents do that too, you know.
Okay, and good luck with the Leaving Cert. Now, we were talking about Bellamy. He's a guy from England who came to Dublin on a business trip and he lost his teddy bear. He's 40 and his wife Zoe and him are distraught because he's had this teddy bear for 30 years. Is this common?
It's not common, no. I mean, the transitional object is kind of common in terms of people using
transitional
like,
object.
Yeah,
right.
So that's like your blankie
comfy,
or your thing.
Comfy blanket,
and small
yeah.
children use it to yes. kind of get through in times where they feel anxious or insecure. Okay. That, and some people
it's called a transitional object.
Transitional object.
That's, right, that's the yeah. scientific term for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some people carry that into teenage years yeah. and they might have things from their childhood or of sentimental value, etc. Hoping by 40 you might be able to find more adaptive ways of managing that. But when anything like this comes up, I would always quote an Australian friend of mine. He says, you do you. You know, the idea of if it's right. not doing any harm,
yeah, it is
sure
not.
What harm.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Well, that's great advice. Coleman, thanks so much. And we'll talk to you soon. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.